And welcome to a special edition of The Issue Is. Our issue is sexual harassment. And our guest is Mira Sorvino. The actress and activist is leading the charge to pass a series of bills in California to address that issue. They passed in the Senate and the Assembly, and now she's pushing California Governor Jerry Brown to sign them into law. He has until the end of the month to do that. Mira Sorvino, welcome to The Issue Is.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Good to
Thank
see you,
you so
too.
Much.
Thank you for having me
so
on.
So what is your bottom line message for Governor Brown?
Our message is that we are looking to him to come out and make part of his legacy a firm support for workers and women everywhere and to take a real stand against sexual harassment in the workplace.
And if California does this, how would California rank around the country?
Well, this is the strongest slate of anti-sexual harassment bills in the nation right now. So we would be the nationwide leader in really showing our people that we care about them and that we're going to protect them.
You know, this is such a personal issue for so many people. And for you, this is a personal issue as well. Of course, you were one of the first celebrities to come forward and put your name against Harvey Weinstein and talking about him. Because telling a story helps for people to understand this, can you tell a little bit about your story and your experience with Harvey Weinstein?
You can read about it in depth in Ronan Farrow's piece in The New Yorker, but he did sexually harass me and maybe a little bit more back in the 90s. And I reported that to Ronan Farrow in his article, and there were two incidents. And I had thought at the time that they were isolated to me. I did not understand that he was a serial predator. At the time, I did not understand what sexual harassment really was defined as. And I did tell everyone I knew, and I even went to someone at Miramax, and she looked at me like I had four heads and that they never would ever want to talk about something like that. But I, you know, I had a boyfriend at the time who told me he thought Harvey was just crushing really hard on me and that I had broken Harvey's heart. And so it almost was my fault for rejecting him somehow. And so I just went on with my life. If any of us had known that there were going to be, at this point, over 90 people who've come out, but I think there are many people still holding their silence, mm-hmm. I think we would have found that strength in numbers and we would have come out and supported each other much sooner. But that's what happened then. In this year, I have been, it's been a very tumultuous year. It was very painful. It was a very hard time to, it was hard to relive that. And mm-hmm. And then later in the year to hear that he had blacklisted me to Peter Jackson. But anyway, I like to focus on the positive. And I, as an activist, because I've been an activist for many years and I've been a Goodwill Ambassador for the United Nations on Human Trafficking since 2009, I've come to learn that awareness without action is hollow.
Sure.
It's great for people to now understand that there is sexual harassment, sexual assault, abuse, rape out there, and that it's very prevalent in our society. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do that changes the equation for people on the ground, for everyday people who are going to work this morning and some of whom are going to be worried about their boss or someone else at the workplace harassing them and making it impossible for them to earn their living, to bring food home to the table to their kids if they don't comply with the aggressive sexual overtures of these people.
Sure.
So.
And we've got a bunch of bills that we're going to talk
yes,
about.
I want to yes.
ask one more question about Harvey, and then we're going to move on and get into the substance of the uh-huh. bills. Because we now see him facing trial. I know right when this story broke, your father was asked about him, and this is what he said.
He's going to go to jail.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. That's good for him if he goes, because if not, he has to meet me, and I will kill him. Real simple.
I mean, what do you think now when you see him in handcuffs, when you see him facing trial, and are you going to be a part of that trial at all?
I'm not part of the criminal trial. My statute ran out a long time ago. I feel gratified that the justice system is treating him like the criminal that he is, rather than letting him skate away because of his wealth and power. But I'm still saddened by the entire situation. It's a travesty. It's a combination of a travesty and a tragedy.
Sure.
For all the women and girls that he assaulted, abused, or harassed, And for his own family, for his own children, it's just a terrible situation. It never should have happened. But this is what our justice system is for. It's for taking people who've done something very wrong and showing the rest of the world that they can't get away with it and making that person have real consequences and putting teeth into our promise that we care about our citizens.
And part of that is some of this legislation that you're working on.
Yeah.
When did you decide, not only am I going to speak out, not only am I going to put my name to this, but I want to be an activist on this. I want to work on legislation in California and try to change the laws.
I had already started thinking when I first, because right after I spoke with Ronan, and then there was this flurry of requests for me to do interviews, and I wasn't ready to do on-camera interviews yet. It was very frightening for me to do that, and I was very emotional. So I started writing pieces. I wrote an op-ed for Time Magazine, and then I did something for Hollywood Reporter. And in those, I already sort of was pushing for, let's find solutions now. What are our solutions? You know, and there's many levels at which you can address this problem. You know, there's the awareness angle, which is very important, but then there's the punishment angle, and then there's the prevention angle, prevention and protection, right? And so I was looking for some way to really be active, and this came to me through Patricia Arquette, and she reached out and said, hey, you know, there's this group doing this event about these bills over at SAG-AFTRA. Would you like to be one of the hosts of it? And I was like, yes, yes, yes. And then I learned about the bills, and it's a group called Equal Rights Advocates. And they were working with these politicians who had drafted these laws and presented these laws. And we held this big forum at SAG-AFTRA, and all of these people in my industry, and not just famous people, men, women, children, talking about abuses that they had received at all levels of our industry. And it was shocking. It was really shocking to hear people stand up and say things like, I was told when I entered the business by my agents that I had a strange look, I was too tall, so I was going to have to sleep my way to the top. If I wanted to work, I was going to have to sleep with people. Other people have said agents harassed them in the room when they interviewed them, casting directors, children talked about having been molested on sets. So we realized that there was this enormous need within our community for what the bills would provide. And also, I like to tell people when people say, well, sexual harassment, but is that really that bad? First of all, on a life level, you know, you and I have talked about meritocracy being sort of the basis of the American dream, right? That if you work hard and you are talented and you really apply yourself, you should be able to advance yourself,
equal
right?
Equal opportunity.
If you come into a situation where someone with more power than you that says, hey, it's my way, wink, wink, or the highway, you have to comply with my desires in order to stay in your job or to get a raise or to be promoted, then that kills your ability to actually just pursue honestly your dream, whatever it is, in whatever field it is. And think about like the working single mom. What happens to her? She's working at a restaurant and her manager is harassing her. If she loses this job, she could be homeless within a matter of a month or so. So that's one of the things. But the other thing I like to say is that sexual harassment is a gateway drug, okay? It's the gateway towards more serious assault, coerced relationships, and rape. So it's a testing ground for men in power, usually men, but sometimes women, to say, how far can I get with this person? Will they do what I want them to do? And if they take the first step, then it's a slippery slope after that.
So let's talk about some of these bills that you are pushing. And all of these bills have now passed, as we said, the legislature, but now we're waiting to see if the governor will sign them. Let's start with SB 1300. This ends what's called the one free grope legal standard, and it also bans non-disparagement agreements. Talk
yes.
about this.
Okay. Well, there was a recent case where a 911 worker was fielding an emergency call, and a coworker came up and put his hand under her blouse and started fondling her breast. And a judge ruled that, based on previous California statute, that it was not pervasive or severe enough to qualify for a civil claim, even though the man eventually did time for a criminal sexual assault. So criminal statute saw it as severe enough for him to actually go to jail, but somehow our California laws are kind of archaic and need to be updated. So this clarifies and gets rid of that concept that it has to be really terrible for it to be taken seriously. And the other side, which is perhaps even more long-lasting and what its effect would be, is that many unscrupulous employers will fold in anti-disparagement clauses in employers' paperwork. And it could be when they're being hired, or it could be folded into a bonus paperwork or a raise paperwork. And that basically says you do not have the right to speak ill of your employer, or else you will be fined, sometimes up to $1 million, even if their behavior is illegal and even if it is true. And the other thing that they try and do is have people sign away in the same manner their right to claim. So they say, you give up your right to bring a civil suit. And a lot of people don't realize they've done this. And there was a recent case in Los Angeles where a famous apparel company, there was a lot of sexual harassment going on within the company. When the women tried to bring suit, they found they had signed not only non-disparagement, giving up their right to claim, but they had also signed an agreement that they would just solve anything in arbitration. So they had no rights. They had no way to get back at this person who had, you know, altered the courses of their lives.
Sure. SB 224, this has to do with clarifying who actually can sexually harass. This talks about, makes clear that sexual harassment by film directors, producers, elected officials, lobbyists, and investors, that's against the law.
Yes, and you know, a lot of people don't understand this, but investors very frequently in all levels of business, not just the film business, people who come to an entrepreneur with money can often say, I'll give you the money if you'll have a relationship with me. And this is very, very common and horrifying, but that practice is out there. And this would say it doesn't have to be your direct boss. It doesn't have to be the person who hired you in order to be a harasser. It could be, in my case, the casting director. It could be my director, my producer. It doesn't have to be the person who signs the checks.
And then also AB 1870, this extends the deadline for filing claims from 1 year to 3 years, gives people more time to file a claim.
Yes, it deals with the statute of limitations on sexual harassment claims, and other civil claims in business usually are 3 to 4 years. And ours, for some reason, was always 1 for sexual harassment. And people have been sexually harassed. Sometimes they don't even realize within the first year that that's what happened to them and that it is illegal and that they do have recourse. And by the time they kind of get it all together, often their statute has run out. And this gives them a much fairer and commensurate with other statutes, time period.
I also want to talk about AB 3080, which says that no worker can be required to waive their rights to take their claims to court.
Yes. This is very important because when they sign these arbitration clauses, and it's almost like when you go to the doctor's office and you get that little paper that says you agree to settle anything in an arbitration court, you lose your right to have it in a public court. You lose the ability to expose the predator. So a company can sweep all of this illegal behavior under the rug, not disclose it to anyone. That person could remain employed, and you have no rights because you've said, I won't sue. I'll only solve this in your private arbitration court, which also can be somewhat slanted against the accuser.
And I know there's one more that you wanted to talk about as well.
Yes, it is. But my eyesight is so bad. It's SB 1343. And for me, one of the most important things is training. And this mandates that in California, and this is also on Governor Brown's desk, formerly our laws regarding sexual harassment training applied only to corporations that have 50 employees or more. This one says that if you have 5 employees or more and you work in the state of California, you would be mandated to provide sexual harassment training not only to your supervisor level, who would kind of be maybe the harassers, but every employee. And when you do that, you create a community of aware people, not potential victims. You have people who then can help each other out and say, you know, say you were being harassed. And I know it might seem ridiculous to you that as a man you could be harassed, but it does happen.
Like I have been harassed in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. And your friend who sits at the next desk, you know, the makeup person, anyone could say, I know from our training that you're being harassed. I'm going to help you. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have all these people who are empowered. They know their rights. And then predators realize that they're not working in an unsuspecting community, that there will be whistleblowers out there and that there will be consequences.
So critics might say this is bad for business and this is going to make California even a worse place to employ people. What do you say to that?
I don't see how it's bad for business to take unscrupulous sexual behavior out of the workplace. And I think that it will actually prevent predators from committing these crimes because they will realize that all eyes are upon them and that there may be serious economic consequences or job loss consequences for them if they do commit these crimes. Right now, everything is stacked for the predator and against the victim. We're just saying, let's make this the safest state in the country for a person to go to work. I think that will draw people to work here, draw talent to work here. I think you always have to look at the principles of our laws. Why do we have laws? We don't have laws so that people can enrich themselves. We have them so that people can fulfill their destiny as American citizens.
What did it mean to you when this passed the California legislature?
I was so thrilled. And I have to tell you, for SB 1300, I was on the phone with many offices because that one is the one that business owners are pushing back on, because they don't want to have to change their ability to completely silence people who have sexual harassment claims. If they're frivolous, they'll be thrown out in court. But if they're real, why shouldn't they be taken seriously? Why shouldn't things be cleaned up? Mm-hmm. So I spoke to at least 10 offices of the assembly people and had wonderful conversations with them. And I explained to them, which is something else I want to communicate to Governor Brown, that the entire survivor community out there, and we number in the millions across the country and in the state, we're looking to see this pass because we want to see that our leaders care about this. The Me Too movement is an important groundswell across the world, and we're looking to make things better. We're looking to make real change, and that's what we hope that Governor Brown will see clear to do.
So if you could say one thing to Governor Brown, what would that be?
Governor Brown, I trust that you will do the right thing and you will pass all of these bills. You will put your signature on all of them because we know that you care about women. We know that you care about workers and you want to make this part of your lasting legacy.
Another big thing happening on the federal level. Now we're seeing the impact of the Me Too movement and the impact of the conversation that you helped to start really on a national level. In what's happening with Brett Kavanaugh. He has this accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, who's now going to be apparently testifying next week, much like we saw Anita Hill testify back in 1991. What do you make of what's happening with her, and do you think about the impact that your movement has had on what's happening now at the federal level?
I am very happy that this process is happening because this situation should be vetted. And I'm happy that she will have a chance to tell her story in court. I really sincerely hope that she's not treated the way Anita Hill was treated all those years ago. I saw Anita Hill speak. She's an incredible woman, last winter. And she was asked by a journalist, how did you feel when the person who sexually harassed you was confirmed and is still sitting on the court today? And she said, I did not get discouraged because I did not consider this the end. That it was honestly just the beginning. And she said, you know, as Martin Luther King said, the universe is on an arc bending towards justice and we'd have to just keep pushing and pushing. And we're all standing on her shoulders. And we're standing on the shoulders of Tarana Burke and all of these other leaders who've been doing the work for years and years. So I am very happy to see, you know, a proper etiquette taking place. And I urge people not to malign the victim, allow her to tell her story without trying to attack her character or attack her motivations. There is a reason people don't disclose. There are many reasons. One of them being that it's a personal trauma that is something that many people would like to just forget about forever and hope it goes away. I think the time that their situation happened, the climate for such a disclosure was so different than right now. But I think she's being very brave, and I think that she needs to be listened to fairly, and it's not a partisan issue. Sexual harassment, sexual assault is, and apparently, you know, according to her, he assaulted her and covered her mouth, and she felt that he might kill her inadvertently. This isn't a partisan issue. People are harassers on both sides of the aisle. There are victims on both sides of the aisle, and we have to make sure that we don't ignore. If someone has actually committed this kind of behavior, we can't just ignore it and say that doesn't matter. It's still okay. You can still have one of the most influential positions in the entire country.
And last question from me. When you think about how the world has changed in a year And think about all the people. Harvey Weinstein, once the most powerful producer, now not in his job. Les Moonves, the most powerful executive in Hollywood, now not in a job. Matt Lauer, the top anchor person, now not in his job. Charlie Rose, not in his job. The conversation has changed, dominating the award shows. And you were one of the people who helped to lead that. How does that register for you? How do you process that? Can you process sort of how the world has changed and your role in that?
You know, I don't want to give myself credit. I'm just one of many voices. I certainly didn't do this for self-advancement. It was very painful, and but I felt necessary. And I felt being the mother of four children, two daughters among them, but also boys who could be, you know, in these situations as well. I felt I had no choice but to be honest and come forward and then try and work to make things better. You know, and to hear the outcry and to see, as I said, the Me Too movement numbers in the millions in this country and the maybe the billions in the world. But we saw that so many people have these secrets that they haven't shared because they were too painful, and that it's rife, and that somehow, since the dawn of time, this kind of abuse has been going on from the stronger to the weaker, the more powerful, the less powerful. And if we can be a little part of flipping that switch and making it not that way and really, really protecting people through our laws and then also training our young generations. You know, there's all these great programs that work with kids and teenagers. There's a group called Peace Over Violence that sponsors a group called Youth Over Violence that do workshops with kids. There's a program called The Green Dot in the Midwest. And they show results. There are statistical results that sexual violence in high schools is reduced by these programs. And you're basically teaching kids how to be people that don't grow into harassers, that don't grow into assaulters, to respect each other, to ask for consent. If I was a small part of that, then that's thrilling, that I did something in my lifetime that meant something that would make, if one less person will get raped or assaulted or harassed, then it was all worth it. Hmm.
Well, you said something, and as we like to play music on this show, so we're playing a little Justin Timberlake Say Something in honor of you and your bravery and all the women who have come forward and are changing the world. Mira Sorvino, thank you.
Thank
Good luck
you.
To you in
thank
your
you
quest
so much.
On this legislation.
Thank you.